Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Fueled by Frank and Honest Gourmet Coffee. The perfect blend to kickstart your day. Barista quality coffee available at Centra and Supervalue.
Recently on the show, we talked about whether it's really okay for men to cry and whether they are allowed to talk about their feelings. Well, my next guest is someone who is encouraging men to do just that. Ted Furnham has been through the mill and is now doing his best to help other men. Ted, you're very welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm not too bad. And yourself?
I'm good. I'm good. Now, listen to me. The thought of a Zoom call makes a lot of us wince these days, but how are you using them?
So I'm using them. I've set up a peer support group for mental health, and basically what it is, I've given people a platform now to be able to come on and share basically the struggles that people might find that are happening in day-to-day life. And again, there's no pressure for people to come on, put the camera on, and even to speak. They can come on and just listen to other people and maybe get some tips and hints about how other people are coping during this, obviously during the lockdown and obviously during the winter months and the dark, cold, rainy nights and stuff like that. So, that's basically what it is. And it's fantastic, and with the amount of numbers that have grown since the first week that I've done it as well. So,
I mean, it is great, but is it worrying as well? It's kind of a double-edged sword, isn't it? I mean, the amount of people seeking and needing help. But it's good news that they are reaching out, I suppose, is the light, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's definitely the light at the fact that there is so many people reaching out and saying that they're in need of help, because I think what we find, particularly in males and a lot of young people, is that we're more afraid or more ashamed to open up and say, I'm struggling or I need help here. Like,
yeah. Now, yeah. Ted, you had a very rough year. Can you tell the listeners what happened back on February the 27th?
So the 27th of February, I decided that I had had enough and I couldn't see any way out. And it was a real low ebb for me. And again, the funny thing is, a lot of people might find themselves in that situation without actually following through with it. But for me, I couldn't see. I felt everyone else would be better off without me, unfortunately. And in that moment in time, it was something that I was not happy in myself, in my life, or what was going on around me. So I decided that I was going to try and end it all.
Now, you had a home at that stage, but can you tell us how had you ended up homeless before that?
Yeah, so again, like obviously in February, I had an apartment and stuff like that. But what people may not know is all of last year, for the majority of the summer, I was homeless, and I was sleeping rough in the car, sleeping on friends' couches, and just kind of doing as a jack-o'-lad would, and going out and doing the wrong things and staying out partying for 2 and 3 days so you didn't have to go and sleep in the car or sleep on someone's couch, like, and stuff like that. But I had separated from my ex-partner and I had moved home back to my mum's house. But again, it was a full house with two sisters, a brother and a niece. And like, again, like most people do have a family there, a family home. But sometimes there's a lot of big personalities there that can clash. And my mum wasn't well. My mum, like, she has epilepsy and stuff like that. So her health wasn't great. Again, I think by me coming back, put a lot of pressure on other people and might have put people out of joint. And again, just the nature of what was going on, stupid little arguments inside any sort of, like, any household where you have your little tiffs and stuff like that. But because I wasn't in the right frame of mind, my arguments were a lot more fiercer, and again, my anger, I couldn't control it, and I was putting a lot of stress on my mum, which meant she was getting a lot sicker. So one day I decided that, look, for my mum's health, I had to leave the house, but with nowhere to go. And
where did you go?
Between couches, between sleeping, I was sleeping in the car, sleeping in, like, just going to car park, sleeping in the Phoenix Park. A friend of mine would let me stay on the couch, or like even after I'd go train and have a shower at training, because I couldn't have a shower anywhere else if I couldn't stay in a friend's house and stuff like that. Like, so
Let's talk about that for a sec, because you're sleeping in your car in the Phoenix Park for a long time. You're going out in the lash. You're, you know, the always with a smile on your face, the joker, you know, always good for a laugh and going out on the rip. And you were still playing football with Ballymun Kickhams, weren't you?
Yeah, I was still playing. How, I have no idea. But yeah, no, I tried to keep the facade that people have and that persona, and it's just act like that there's nothing wrong, there's nothing going on, and you try and keep everything as normal as possible when if really and clearly it's far from it, like, do you know what I mean?
And Ted, do you remember that moment where you thought, you know, I can't do this, you know, that moment when you were, you know, alone in the Phoenix Park? Do you remember that night?
Yeah, but there was one night in particular during the summer. I remember I was after finishing work, and I'd left work and I had nowhere to go this evening, and I just drove back up to the Phoenix Park. I think I stopped in a Chinese and got some food or something, like, and just sat in the car and just ate the food and put the seat back and fell asleep. And I remember then at about 3 or 4 in the morning I woke up and it was just these weird noises going on, as you can imagine, in the Phoenix Park. Yeah. In the middle of the night, like. And I kind of woke up and I looked around and I could not see anything. It was just pitch black, but all I could hear was these just weird noises. And I remember just breaking down and I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I remember going to turn the car on and I was literally just going to drive straight into a wall. And I just didn't want to be there anymore, like, and unfortunately, like, but fortunately for me, in this moment in time, it just so happened my phone lit up and it was a picture of my son on it. And again, so that instant, that's what stopped me that time, like. Wow. And I remember just breaking down and sobbing. But again, I didn't ask for help, and I just pushed away, pretending that everything was okay, when clearly, like, and that should have been a warning sign for me that everything wasn't okay. But again, I didn't.
So you still didn't get help then, even then, when you're at your feeling your lowest?
No, I just continued on as if everything was normal and everything was all right.
And things on the pitch and football, I mean, because you talked about your anger there and you had moments as well, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I remember, and this was during all this as well, and it was a couple of weeks after that night in Phoenix Park, and I was playing a game for Ballymun, and I remember being viewed from the sideline. And normally, like, I've grown up being mixed race and being from Ballymun and stuff, you'd be used to the abuse, and most of the time you were able to laugh it off, or you reacted in a way that was a positive outcome instead of a negative one. And but in this moment in time, this day in particular, I just
had enough.
I had enough and lost the plot. And I remember, it was funny because I remember going out to the game and saying to someone, I shouldn't play this game. And I just had a bad feeling about it beforehand.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. Thinking back on it, it's mad. Like, that, even just walking out to the pitch that night, I remember saying to a friend of mine, I said, I shouldn't play this tonight. There was a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
I knew my head wasn't right. And he was like, no, you'd be grand. And again, I looked at it as if, yeah, I'll play the match and I'll forget about it for 60 minutes. But sure, I think I only lasted about 40 minutes on the pitch anyway before I was sent off.
I mean, there's no excuse for violence, but we can understand.
Yeah, that's it. I don't condone what
totally,
I've done and,
totally.
And stuff. But I think sometimes when you're pushed to the yeah. the limit, you can. People are eventually going to snap. Like,
Your dad isn't in your life these days. Why did you decide you needed to cut him off?
I think, like a lot of people, like, I was born in New York, and my mom moved back here when I was like 1 or 2, and just I never had a relationship when I was growing up until I was around 11 or 12, and I remember going over, and again, he was fantastic then for the 2 weeks that I was there. But I think over the next 20 years, he constantly just let me down.
Yeah.
And wasn't there for me, and given open promises that were constantly being broken. And again, what was happening was it was worse than my self-worth, if you get me.
Yeah.
So in a way that when you look at things, and why do you feel not good enough? And the funny thing is, there's the program, they're like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and just a scene where Will and his father, like, and his dad has says that he can't Will can't go on a trip, and
yeah.
it's like, why doesn't he want me? Why am I not good enough? And I think in a lot of ways, that's the way I felt, and that's the way I felt for a long time. Is, and I probably sabotaged relationships because I was looking for something that no one could provide, that only he could give me. And I think eventually I had to, after everything that happened in February, I made the decision that I wasn't going to let him back into my life again. I have to look after myself. I have to look after my own child. And I'm not going to be the father that I had growing up, and I'm going to be one that's going to be there and that I can be accountable. Whereas I had someone that wasn't accountable, that was never there and would ask me for favours to help him out and the other way around. And no child should have to look after their parents when they're younger. Like.
Yeah, absolutely right. You sound like you're in a much better place these days.
Yeah, 100%. And again, that's, I've been very fortunate with the people that I have around me, with my partner and my job in particular, and obviously family and friends. And like, I know a lot of people are not in my position. And again, this is why I've set up the group, that we're giving people that platform, and we're giving the people the options to have people there for them that mightn't have it. And again, like, as I said to people before, if this had been an option for me last year, would I have taken a hand up? I can't answer that right now because it wasn't there. But the thing is, I didn't have the option for it.
Yeah. Can I ask you, what was it that made you, because you didn't seek help that time in the park, you kind of kept going and hiding it. When did you reach out, and how did Pieta House help and all of that? Tell me.
So it was literally just, obviously after I tried to commit suicide in February, I remember sitting in the Mater Hospital and my mum begged me just, she's like, look, please, what's going on? And again, with my parent and a friend of mine that was there as well, and they were like, what's going on? Please just open up to us. And I remember obviously just breaking down and just saying, letting everything out.
Yeah.
And the next day, my mum made the phone call to be at a house and got me in, and like a couple of days later, it was, I literally had two face-to-face sessions with them before COVID hit, and everything was done over the phone. But like, again, for Pieta House, they were absolutely fantastic in that moment in time, and they were what I was looking for. Like, but without really delving into too many of the issues, the deeper issues that I had and that I was struggling with. And that's where the counsellors then after that then came to the fore, and
yeah.
I was able to delve deeper into myself and deeper into my own mind and realise what was going on.
What was it like opening up for the first time? Because, I mean, you've had years of bottling everything up and getting on with it and putting on a happy face and going out. What was that like? Was that a difficult thing to do?
Yeah, it was very difficult. And I think at the very beginning, I didn't initially open up to about everything to my family. Like,
yeah.
And again, you were hiding things. But there's an old saying that everything always comes out in the end.
Like, yeah.
You can't hide what's going on. And no matter how much of an act that you put on, everything does come to a boil, and things will show up eventually. Like,
totally.
So, but I think when you're open and honest about stuff and saying, look, this is what's going on, this is what happened, I don't know what to do. And I think that's the more we open up about it, the more we normalise the conversation, the easier it becomes.
And it's a process, isn't it? Like, you're not going to get there in the first session, and you do it at your own pace. And that's why these experts in Pieta House are so good at what they do. Can I ask you, how much does focusing on the good stuff, like your partner and your son and the guy and your work, how does that, you know, help you get going every day?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Like, and the thing is, I actually had one of the calls last night, we had Rory Stories on, and he was talking about just the negative and positive platform. And again, it's waking up and making the decision, right, I want to try to be a good day. And there's going to be days where you wake up and it's going to be difficult and you're feeling down. And like, I remember last week I had one of them days where I woke up and I was like, there was stuff that was going on, money that came out of the account that you weren't expecting to come out. And then all of a sudden, it's all these little things that build up and you're making them worse in your own head. But at this time, because I was able to cope with it more, I made a phone call to someone. I made a phone call to my partner. I said, I'm actually having a bad day here. She's like, why, what's going on? And I was like, this is after coming out. And she's like, no, that's fine. We can work on that. And again, ringing friends. I remember ringing one of the lads saying the same thing. I was like, geez, I'm having a bad day here today.
And that's amazing that you did that, isn't it? And you've got to a place where, like, that's a totally change of habit for you.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Like, I always look back to where I was probably this time last year, whereas I wouldn't have made that phone call. I wouldn't have said things to my partner. I would have hid it away.
Yeah.
I would have tried to deal with it myself and made things 10 times worse. Or I would have been borrowing money for people. So you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. And again, you have to pay them back. But I'm in a place now where I don't have to do that. One of the best pieces of advice that someone gave me was, like, you're at rock bottom. It's like the strongest base that you can start at is rock bottom. The only place you can go from there is up.
Yeah.
And that is the best piece of advice that I've been given. And it's something that I've taken with me every day moving forward. And it's something that I look at every day. And it's something that I've wrote down in my, I start keeping a diary and stuff like that. And it's one of the things that I stress to people on that are joining the Zoom calls and for the support group, is the fact that if anyone is feeling that rock bottom, it's okay, because the only place you can go from there is up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's an incredible story, and it sounds like you've done, oh my God, a huge amount of work on yourself in the last few months. Your son is lucky to have you, because there's people out there, you know, just find it very difficult. The fact that you put the work into yourself is phenomenal, and I wish you the very best for the future. I just want to thank you for talking to me today. And if people want to get in touch with you, can I give out this email, tedsopenmic@gmail.com? Yeah. Or I just want to say as well, if people are listening and they need more urgent help, the Samaritans, you can call them 116 123. Ted Fernham, you're an absolute legend. Best of luck with everything. Keep up
thank
the walks.
Thank you very much. And just to add, for the support group, I do have trained professionals on the call as well.
Okay.
That if people are joining and they are struggling and need some urgent care, I do have, a psychiatric nurse, I have a trained psychotherapist, and I have a trained counsellor as well on the call.
And how often do you do these, Ted?
So the calls are twice a week, every Monday and Thursday at 9 o'clock. So again, it's giving people after the weekend, it's giving them something, a distraction. It's after the kids go to bed or wherever else. And you can come on and just have a listen to other people and just relax and forget about what's going on.
Brilliant. So they can just jump on, if they're not ready to talk, they can just jump on and listen and get support that way. And when they're ready to talk, they can do.
That's it, exactly. And again, there's no pressure from anyone to speak.
Yeah.
Again, we open the floor up to people, and we hope that people will share. And as time goes on, since I started this probably about 3 weeks ago, and again, it just came from a conversation with a couple of people, again, around the stresses that people might find during COVID. But in the space of 3 weeks, I've literally doubled the numbers that are involved and coming on. Like,
well, it's phenomenal. And thank you for doing it. It's so needed. Ted, you're a star. Keep up the good work, and I'll chat to you soon, okay?
Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks, love. Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
There we go. That is Ted Fernham. One incredible story, and he's offering much needed support. Just to give his email again, if you want to get in touch and find out more, it's tedsopenmic@gmail.com. We'll be back right after this.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.